The United States has had 44 presidents, and in the production, 44 plays for 44 presidents, debuting tomorrow at the Des Moines Social Club, each one gets their due. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today I'll talk with the director and the producer of the Des Moines production of 44 plays for 44 presidents, just one of 44 productions taking place around the country in the lead-up to the elections. And the Landlocked Film Festival takes place in Iowa City tomorrow through Sunday. I'll talk with Mary Blackwood, the president of the Landlocked Film Festival, and some of the filmmakers whose work will be a part of this year's festival. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're going to spend the hour today in theaters of a couple of different sorts today. In the second half of the show, we'll get a preview of the Landlocked Film Festival starting tomorrow in Iowa City. I'll talk to the president of the festival, also Kelly Rundle, who's a filmmaker behind the film Axeman, and Paul Benedict and Scott Sipker, known as the Iowa Filmmakers. We'll talk about their sitcom, Marooned. But we'll start the hour in a theater of a different kind. The new production, 44 Plays for 44 Presidents, debuts tomorrow at the Des Moines Social Club and runs through the weekend before the election. This is just one of 44 productions taking place around the country in the lead up to the elections. And with me are Adam Moeller. He's the director of the play. Hello, Adam.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And Matthew McIver, the artistic director of the Des Moines Social Club and the producer of the play. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Charity. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming back to the show. And Adam, let's start with you. This project is not just limited to the Des Moines Social Club. This is part of a much larger project. Can you give us a little bit of an overview?
Absolutely. The neo-futurists out of Chicago, wrote this about a decade ago and have updated it as we've went through presidents. Well, this year they decided to set up a 2012 festival in which they attempt to get 44 or more productions of it happening during the 2012 calendar year. And with that, then each festival can represent a single president. It's not that they don't do the whole show. I don't want to confuse people like that. But each production is then named for a president. Ours is Reagan. And they film that small segment of the production and send it in, and then it becomes a big compilation video. But yeah, so they put this together, and I believe we have almost 48 in the festival nationwide now.
And Matthew, did they approach the Des Moines Social Club, or was this something at the Des Moines Social Club that you said, hey, I want to get involved in this?
Well, back in 2011, this crazy guy named Adam Moeller came to me with this idea. Adam had a contact, a friend of his, who was helping to secure the productions around the country. And he said, brought it to our attention and said that it would be something he'd be interested in working on. And we thought initially, hey, this is great. We'll be one of the first productions because of Iowa First in the Nation caucuses. So we'll do it in January because the caucuses are going to be in February, and that'll be great and terrific production. Of course, there's no chance the caucuses would ever move to the fifth day of January and completely shred our production schedule.
Right.
Which is, of course, exactly what happened. I'm still mad at those other states that try and jump ahead of Iowa every year and destroyed my theatrical dream. But we decided there's nothing better. It's kind of been great because Iowa's still a swing state. It's still, a heavily politicized season. I'm probably one of the few people who says that's still great in the state of Iowa. Right. But it's been good for us because it means that there's still a lot of attention on the election and on the issue of the presidency, the office of the presidency. And so we just said, well, heck, if we can't do it for the caucuses, we're going to shift it to the opening production of our 2012-2013 season, and we'll kick it off with this hilarious look at the most important job you can have in this country.
Mm-hmm. So right now across the country, you said this is in the 2012 calendar year that the hope was to get these 44 productions going. Do you know, are there other productions going on right now?
Absolutely. As he mentioned, someone had come to me that's a part of it, trying to secure them, and that himself, he's directing the one out in Boston, and they're opening the day after us. We're actually the 29th show to open, you know, across the nation, there were some that opened like back in April, and they've been opening more and more frequently as we get closer to the election. But we'll be about the 29th, and then there'll be, you know, maybe what, not quite 20 more to go.
And it's all kinds of theaters across the country. Yeah. I know Jiva Theater in Rochester, which is a major regional theater. Their production opened in September, I think, or was it August?
I don't know.
Somewhere around in there. I think it opened last month. You know, so
there's colleges are doing it. Yeah. There's a grade school or like high school or something that did it, and they actually used, you know, 75 or 100 and some people to put
wow.
It on.
Yeah, the show's written for, is it five actors, Adam?
Five actors, but there are actually 158 characters in the show.
And in this production, you do have five actors, right?
We use five actors in our production, yes.
And I was thinking last night, I think Jim Morrill has possibly, like, the best arc of anybody. He's help me, Adam, he's Washington,
right.
He's Jefferson, he's Lincoln,
right.
He's Reagan,
yeah.
He's... somebody else pretty prestigious. He plays a couple of them that are the less
yeah.
successful. I think he plays Warren G. Harding.
Yeah, Fillmore Pierce, or not Fillmore.
Millard Fillmore? Oh,
Franklin Pierce. Pierce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of them that are less good.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And you mentioned Reagan there, and mm-hmm. and part of this project to get all of these productions done in this calendar year is to put together a video of the entire production, right?
Correct. So, as I said, there's like 48 or 50 of them maybe actually happening across the nation. 44 of them get to represent a president. So we signed on early so that we knew we could be a part of that. And our because of his Iowa radio ties, we have chosen Reagan.
So you chose Reagan over, I don't know, let me think, Herbert Hoover.
Well, there...
Well, if you yeah. had to pick one of those who has a more right. polished and sterling reputation, which
yeah.
way would you go, Charity?
I mean, yeah. And also,
I'm not
time,
going to say.
Yeah. And at the time we were discussing it, that was when there was some talk, a lot of the Republican National Convention and all the Reaganomic talking. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And it was like, why not? He's becoming, his name is getting huge again. So,
yeah.
You know, let's bring him back.
And there's obviously there's Iowa connections to a couple of them, and
right.
we did kick around Hoover for a little bit.
Yeah. Eisenhower, Polk, Polk County
had a strong conversation about Polk there. Probably the longest conversation I've ever had about James K. Polk. Although weirdly, my grandmother did have the James K. Polk cookbook. There's a cookbook from the 11th president. I don't know why.
So you didn't write the script, but in claiming Reagan.
In claiming Reagan.
What does that give you?
Okay, so because we are the Reagan chapter of the National Festival, that means, the way the play is set up is that it's really almost simplified to say Washington has 2 minutes, then Adams has 2 minutes, and Jefferson has 2 minutes. And it's just like it's 44 plays, each 2 minutes for each, you know, one for each president. So we film that 2 minute piece for Reagan, and, you don't have to film it from the stage. You can film it from anywhere. And we set it up, like we went to a location and set it up to make it look like he was kind of in the Oval Office or, you know, and, mm-hmm. You know, we went kind of a little abstract with it, but not too abstract. We kept it within time.
Yeah. Given that there are 158 characters and 44 plays, the production's pretty abstract. You shouldn't expect a high degree of naturalism when you see this. It's people putting on a jacket to represent presidents. It's you got men and women playing presidents. So it's.
And on October 30th, the neo-futurists will, and I don't know through what type of internet source, but will launch the video and you can watch it. October 30th. The entire nation, tiny videos.
But before that, you want to come down to the Des Moines Social Club
absolutely.
And see the thing live and in the flesh.
You've got to see it the correct way, which is only by us. We're probably the only one in the nation doing it right.
I'm sure that's true. What does the Reagan 2 minutes focus on?
The Iran-Contra affair.
So the part of his legacy I'm sure that his fans are proudest of.
Yeah.
It focuses on his involvement with that and Ollie North and the conflict around that and some of the atrocities that were happening in Central America and so it gets into some of the play itself overall is really funny. It's really fast.
you didn't make it sound funny there.
Yes, I know. I realized I wasn't painting the most commercial picture right.
The great part is is from what I picked up from the show and when I was asked, you know, kind of what my concept was about it, it's that this 44 plays 44 presidents to me is 44 flaws of 44 fathers. It's like, it's not that they're, you know, all presidents have their good and bad points. And this just kind of highlights little things. And I think it helps you see that there are flaws in all men. Well, except Washington. He was polished perfect.
Yeah. But, he comes off looking pretty good, frankly.
Yeah, he does. But, I mean, that's really what it is. You know, there's not going to be, of the 44 little plays you're going to see, you'll be able to find what was the flaw, you know, what was a flaw in everybody.
Have you learned some things from this production?
Gosh.
Can you give me a couple of examples of some things that you've learned?
Like really lame things? Like Fillmore was the first president to have a stepmother?
Anything a little more profound that you've learned? I mean, some of the was it Pierce with the
Pierce, I mean, well, Pierce obviously going behind his wife's back in order to campaign for president because she wasn't a fan of that, and when he won, she thought it was like divine, you know, like divine intervention that had brought him there, and come to, you know, she found out then that he was campaigning behind her back, that sort of stuff.
He'd promised he wouldn't go for elective office again and lied to her about it, and so there were some really fascinating some of the ones we don't know as well, you know. So you one thing that I've learned is there's more than one president who gets into office and appoints all of his friends, and then they screw things up and you know, misappropriate money, and it ends horribly for everyone. So so apparently that's a bad idea.
Yep.
Well, and you when you do Grover Cleveland, is there you focus on some really nasty, ugly politics that were going on at the time?
Well, the play itself doesn't. It doesn't really focus on the nasty politics. It focuses more on the aspect that Cleveland's time in office was a hectic party sort of atmosphere. You know, like it was very unorganized and not – I don't even know how you'd place
it. I mean, there was some corruption there. And
it definitely shows of corruption, but, you know, the play itself isn't – there are other plays that show –
Cleveland's the one where Mary Bricker's making it rain, isn't it?
She's making it. Yeah, that's
She's
right.
She's throwing up the bills in the air and showing the whole party atmosphere that was going on with Cleveland in his first term, and then sort of the chickens come home to roost a little bit in the second term.
Yes.
Well, we'll talk about more of the 44 presidents in just a moment. My guests are Adam Muller. He is the director of 44 Plays for 44 Presidents at the Des Moines Social Club. Matt McIver is the artistic director of the Des Moines Social Club, and he is also the producer of this play. Coming up later in the hour, we'll talk about the Landlocked Film Festival, which opens tomorrow in Iowa City. I'll talk to the president of the festival. She founded it in 2007, so we'll get an overview. I'll also talk to a few of the filmmakers who are going to be showing their work at the festival this year. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're talking about theaters. We're talking about a play right now, and in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about some movies, documentaries, and a sitcom as well. In just a moment, we'll get a preview of the Landlocked Film Festival starting tomorrow in Iowa City. But right now, we're talking about the new production, 44 Plays for 44 Presidents, which debuts tomorrow at the Des Moines Social Club and runs through the weekend before the election. And with me are Adam Muller, he is the director of the play, and Matthew McIver, the artistic director of the Des Moines Social Club and the producer of the play. And can you give me an idea of some of the variety of different ways that these presidents are portrayed in the hour and a half that the show runs?
Some are just going to be what you might consider just your general, you know, there are some that are serious, kind of very subtle, serious tones.
The Iran-Contra thing's hilarious. I love Ben Franklin roasts Thomas Jefferson. That's one of my favorites.
Yep,
it's such a giant Flyers
piece.
Club roast.
There's a game show. Chester A. Arthur's is a game show format. MacArthur, that's way off. Let's see.
You've got songs. There's a whole sort of him to how fabulous Richard Nixon was with a background chorus of burglars.
That's right. For Garfield, it's quite the ballet.
Yeah, there's a wonderful ballet.
It's a ballet.
James Garfield ballet.
And how does that portray President Garfield?
Well, you know, through the majesty of dance, you show the – I don't remember what number president he is, but there's a dance narrative. One hesitates to use the phrase interpretive dance anymore, but it's kind of an interpretive dance about Garfield's administration and demise.
That's right, yeah. I don't even know how to describe it.
Is there narration or does the audience just need to – interpret the dance.
You can follow pretty clearly what the action is.
Yeah, the dance is very well set up so that you can see.
It's almost like a silent film.
Yeah, that's exactly what that would be the best way to describe it.
Yeah, you can sort of follow all of the action and the choreography. there's a couple of interesting sort of interior monologues for Andrew Johnson and then Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah.
There's an unflattering yet hilarious portrayal of Taft as kind of a giant baby. It's all kinds of incredibly creative approaches to what could be an incredibly dry subject, and it moves like a freight train. It just like thunders through.
Does everybody get 2 minutes, or are there some presidents that get a little more?
I would say that for the most part, almost everybody gets their 2 minutes, because even in the script, when it seems like they've got a short time, it's because there's probably just not as lot of dialogue in it. You know, it's just you got to get through a storyline. But
obviously, if you have two terms, you get 4 minutes.
I would say that there's, I think.
Don't think that's right.
What's that?
No, because there are a couple of them that get close to 4 minutes because, like, when Garfield has a term and then there's a term in between and then he's got another term.
Oh, I
mean, Cleveland.
So he counts
Cleveland
twice.
So he gets – Cleveland.
Sorry.
Not Garfield.
But and then there are some that just generally take – I mean, there's – Kennedy's is pretty serious and it actually takes
– You know, that's a great
it
point.
It slows down.
That's the most moving part of the piece. And I don't want
to – It becomes very –
To give away too much, but there's some personal connections that the cast offer to Kennedy.
We're very fortunate to have
And it's really
capable.
It's really moving to hear people talk about because we at the Des Moines Social Club often we have a sort of a young demographic. One of the things that appeal to us about this show is that we do a sort of younger, fresher kind of take on things usually, and it was a very creative show, which is something that we're very interested in. Adam is a relatively young director, and we're obviously interested in cultivating young talent. But we've got a great cast with some folks in it who are some really seasoned actors and who have some, you know, who were there when Kennedy was shot and are able to share some things that are – I mean, for me, I said to you the other day, I think Kennedy's my favorite piece out of it because it's got the most emotional pack. In the middle fun, exciting – piece, there's this real heart to it, which is, I think, beautifully done.
You know, in the last few years, I mean, you mentioned Taft, and of course, Taft was mocked in political cartoons in his own day and age. Yeah. But
thank goodness that doesn't happen anymore.
That's right.
But, you know, I was just thinking, really starting with Nixon and then Ford, I'm thinking about, you know, Saturday Night Live with Gerald Ford. Our modern presidents have been mocked in theater. forever. All of the stand-up comedians like to talk about the presidents, and then of course on Saturday Night Live we see people portraying them in different things. Do you think that changes how the later presidents, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, were written about?
I actually don't know. I don't think it does. I think that the format that they utilized to write, you know, even from the beginning going through writing all these presidents is it's the same sort of take. They don't they speak to each president, you know, in a different way, but none of them are really.
I would almost say that they take that Saturday Night Live perspective and extend it back to, you know, Washington, Jefferson, Madison.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
You know, so they sort of take that irreverent send-up kind of feel that, you know, like, you know, Chevy Chase saying of Ford, "I was told there would be no math on this debate." They take that idea all the way back to the presidents, you know, Millard Fillmore, Franklin Pierce, that we maybe haven't had that, you know. And we've had that irreverent that satirical streak from the beginning
right.
in this country.
Right.
I mean, we talk about people talk about, oh, this is the most divided we've ever been in American history. And it's like, really? Well, nobody's shooting, which we've had. You know, no, the president hasn't taken a hickory stick and beaten one of his opponents, which has happened. We haven't, you know, there, you know, for as rough as this campaign has been, it's nothing like what Adams and Jefferson went through. I mean, Abigail right. Adams didn't speak to Thomas Jefferson for the rest of his life, I think.
Right, because of the stuff he said.
Because of the stuff that was alleged about John Adams in that yeah. campaign. It's rough politics and satire has been around forever, but what you rightly point out is that modern sort of Saturday Night Live sensibility gets extended to all 44 of them.
Right.
And that's part of what makes it so much fun.
Well, and I guess I'm wondering, you know, for a very long time, and let's take George Bush Sr., the first President Bush, whenever anybody imitated President Bush, they weren't imitating President
right.
Bush. They were imitating Dana Carvey.
Yeah, yep. absolutely.
And yep. and so do you see echoes of that? Are there pop culture portrayals that you can't get away from?
I think that one of the things I like about the show is that there's not a lot of that specific kind of imitation. You mentioned Dana Carvey and, you know, with Bush 43, you know, I just think of the word strategery and Will Ferrell, which, you know, Bush never said that, but I still say strategery all the time. So, but there's not a lot of mimicry or imitation that goes on in the show. It's much more fast-moving theatrical, you know, portrayals of the image rather than the character or caricature.
Mm-hmm.
Is that – I don't mean to speak for you, Adam, but that's
no,
what I see.
That's perfect, and that's it. That's, you know, the neo-futurists don't focus on trying to capture the character or, you know, of a man. They're very presentational. That's all they want. They want to take – you know, what was this guy's presidency? You know, what captured it or what facts were missed out on in it, you know, something like that. And they present that and they're not looking to, you know, find a guy who looks exactly like Lincoln and can talk exactly
yeah.
like Lincoln or something
it's,
like that.
It's much more, like you said, it's a portrayal yep. of the presidency rather than
right.
of the man.
Yep.
Matt, you're starting to sound a little bit like a presidential historian in talking about all of the individual presidents.
Is that a polite term for know-it-all?
But what do you want people to take away from the show? Obviously, it's supposed to be a lot of fun, but is there a message?
I love Adam's idea about the 44 flaws. I love that I also like the idea that I take away from this, that a lot of the things that we're challenged by in our own current politics have been trends in American history pretty much forever. You know, and I think that a lot of the sort of unspoken thing, particularly the last line of the show, which I won't give away, is that it's not just about these guys. There's a whole electorate behind them that enables these problems and picks these guys. Adam has what I find is a heartwarmingly optimistic view that, well, one way to describe it is every democracy gets the leader it deserves. So if you don't like who's in office, get out there and vote.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge part of it.
And
us.
Of course, you are portraying one of the candidates in this election. You are portraying President Barack
yep.
Obama. Is there a message to voters?
The message to voters, I would say, is to vote. The show is something that you can enjoy no matter where you are in the political spectrum. It is not; it's in no way partisan. I've talked to Democrats about it. I've talked to Republicans about it. It is, and that's one thing that I really want people to understand
yeah.
is this is not. It's not an electioneering show. It's a show
yep.
about our history and our country, and it's a heck of a lot of fun. And there's something you're going to enjoy, no matter where you fall on the spectrum.
Matthew McIver, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Matthew McIver is the artistic director of the Des Moines Social Club and producer of the play. And Adam Muller, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Adam Muller is the director of the play 44 Plays for 44 Presidents, which debuts tomorrow at the Des Moines Social Club and runs through the weekend before the election. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Landlocked Film Festival opens tomorrow in Iowa City and runs through the weekend. In a moment, I'll talk with some of the filmmakers involved in the festival, including Paul Benedict and Scott Sipker, the Iowa filmmakers who are showing their pilot episode of their sitcom Marooned at the festival. With me right now is Mary Blackwood, president of the Landlocked Film Festival, which she founded in 2007. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And since this is your baby, you founded the Landlocked Film Festival. Tell us just briefly, what is it about? Why did you want to have a film festival in Iowa City?
Okay, first of all, there were a few other people besides myself. Some people who love film who thought that it was Iowa City was a perfect place to have a film festival. We already have music festivals, arts fest, but we didn't have a film festival.
And this year, is there an overarching theme to what you'll be showing at the festival?
Well, I think our theme is always to be as diverse and broad as possible and to bring things from Iowa and around the world. So we do try to be comprehensive. That makes it harder to say there's a theme. The theme is high-quality movies that are independent and new.
And as I mentioned, we'll be talking with a couple of filmmakers mm-hmm. in just a moment. Can you tell me some of the highlights, some of the things you're most excited about this year?
Well, something we're doing that's new this year, and it kind of segues from what you were just talking about with the other individuals, is that we have what we're calling an election year special this year, because we got a couple of documentaries on opposite sides kind of the political line, or one leans left, one leans right, and we're showing them together and inviting everybody to come down, whether or not you believe in the topic of each documentary, and learn something about the other side. And it's just right up against the election here, so we thought that was a good idea. One of them is called Party Crashers, and it's about the Tea Party, and it's made by people who are Tea Party people, I believe. And the other one is called As Goes Janesville, which is about Paul Ryan's hometown, but it's about the middle-class people there struggling when, I think, the GM plant closed down.
And what are some of the other things you'll be showing this year?
Well, we always love showing the narrative features, too, which is like a fiction film. And we have a really wonderful new Western that's called Heathens and Thieves with a new kind of twist on the Western. Then we also have really funny things like Ronald the Barbarian, a feature-length animation, and a lot of, as usual, we have a number of shorts that are playing in different groups, and for people who've never seen an independent short, these are eye-openers. It's like, you know, what can you say in 15 minutes? Come on down to Landlocked, and you'll see, and people have become, you know, real advocates of this kind of film after they've gone to Landlocked in past years.
I think some people, when they think about short films, they think about, you know, like the stuff that Pixar does, the short, fun little films that you see before a Pixar movie. But these are not kids' topics, all of them.
Although right. We do have the family-friendly film section on Saturday at noon, which is about an hour of short films that are appropriate for kids to come to and enjoy. And some of them are animation, some of them are live action. But most of it is true. We also have an animation group we're calling Awesome Animation, playing that in the evening, and those aren't necessarily for kids at all. They're for grown-ups. They're beautifully made, very intriguing, and show what the art of animation can be like.
Some of the films that are being shown at the festival are made by Iowans. Many, many are not. How do you decide what you'll include in the festival?
We put out a call for entries around, you know, worldwide, basically, and filmmakers find us because these days the Internet makes that easy. And so we get a lot of films from Iowans, from other countries, from around the U.S., and we just throw them all into the same pool and have about 20 people in a screening committee. We watch them, and then we just decide which should make it into the film festival. We're looking for quality, intriguing topics, diversity. So the Iowans do compete with the rest of the films.
And will there be representatives from each one of these films like the director or somebody who's involved in the film at the festival?
As many of them who can come do come. They love to show up. We never get everybody having a representative, because if you make a 5-minute film and you live in Japan, you know, it's quite a trip.
Right.
But the people who live nearby will come. They'll get in their car and drive down here. A lot of people fly in from, you know, the coast. So I think we're going to have at least 25 filmmakers and actors around.
And you mentioned competing. There are awards given. What are the awards?
Well, the awards in each category are first and second place, and the categories would be like documentary feature, narrative feature, documentary short, animation. That's basically it.
And what do you think it means for a film or a filmmaker to win an award at the Landlocked Film Festival?
Well, as our reputation grows, I think it means more than it used to. Mainly, though, filmmakers, independent filmmakers are trying to get attention in order to distribute their films. And so for them to win an award or several awards at different festivals really helps them get attention and credibility. So they really want to get awards at these festivals.
As I mentioned, the Landlocked Film Festival started in 2007, and it's getting to be at least a grade schooler by now.
Yeah.
How have things changed as the film festival is maturing?
Well, certainly, I think more people are learning about it. We had smaller audiences in the beginning, and they're growing now. I think we're also, people are coming to understand more about what a film festival can offer that going to the movie theater can't, which is to say you get to talk to the filmmaker right after the film's over in many cases. It's like I was saying recently to somebody, you know, you can't go into a Ron Howard movie and then ask Ron afterwards why he filmed it that way, but you can go to Heathens and Thieves and you can ask the producer why it was filmed the way it was, and you can get to know these people because they're just wandering around downtown at the festival.
Mary, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Mary Blackwood is president of the Landlocked Film Festival, which starts tomorrow in Iowa City and runs through the weekend. You can find the complete schedule on the website landlockedfilmfestival.org. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with a few of the filmmakers who will be showcasing their work at the festival. Kelly Rundle is producer, writer, and director of Axeman, and Paul Benedict and Scott Sipker, the Iowa filmmakers, will be showing the pilot of their sitcom, Marooned. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Landlocked Film Festival opens tomorrow in Iowa City and runs through the weekend. And I'm going to spend the next few minutes talking to a few of the different filmmakers who will be showcasing their work at the Landlocked Film Festival. First, Kelly Rundle is here. He is the producer, writer, and director of the new documentary Axeman, which he worked along with his wife, Tammy, on the film. He's based in Moline, Illinois. Hello, Kelly.
Good morning.
And this is a film that falls into the documentary category. You talked to Ben Kiefer, the host of River to River, about the documentary in some depth earlier in the year. But it's a fairly short documentary. It's about the Villisca axe murderers. Why did you decide to make a documentary about that?
Well, and we do normally work in a long form, and so it was a little bit of a challenge for us in a way to do a short subject. And actually, the film is not about the axe murders, but it's about the man who, or I should say a man, who has spent almost 60 years researching this one event in Iowa history, and kind of trying to figure out why someone would do that. And I think we know, but we kind of wanted to communicate that story to other people.
And how did you, in a documentary, give us that kind of perspective?
Well, we talked to Ed, and we also talked to some people who are close to him about his work and what he's done over the years and what his motivations are. And we also asked them not to refer directly to what his work was specifically. So again, this was another kind of a little challenge, I guess, as a filmmaker to do the film without talking about what his research was, at least not directly. And but I think people will get a sense of why he's so fascinated by what is probably Iowa's most enduring unsolved mystery.
Right, and this was, of course, a mass murder that took place in 1912, so this is the centennial of that horrific event. And I'm sure that builds interest in your film. But as I mentioned, it's a fairly short documentary. What kind of outlets do you have for showing this film to people?
Well, you know, not too many. The film festival, of course, and it's something that may appear online at some point. And I think we thought that at some point we'll probably re-release the Villisca Living with a Mystery documentary, and this might be an extra feature on that DVD.
Is this how many different festivals are you going to with this?
Well, we haven't really decided. This will actually be the premiere of the film. We kind of previewed a shorter version during the centennial commemoration in Red Oak in June, on June the 10th, and this will be the first time this version has been shown publicly.
This is a film without a lot of commercial potential. And that doesn't speak to the quality of the film at all. It's just, you know, a documentary that is 24 minutes long is not something, as I've alluded to, that fits easily into a lot of different formats for showing it to people. What drives you to create something like this when you know that finding the audience is going to be challenging?
Well, I think it's, to some degree, you know, we've had a relationship with Dr. Epperle since 1993. He's a great friend, and I think we wanted to do some sort of a tribute to him and to the significance of the work that he's done as a historian. And as I say, part of it too was just it was a kind of an exercise for us, I guess, as filmmakers. We've had an idea for a while to do a film where people talked about the same subject and the impact that this subject or event had on their lives, but not to say what they were ever, you know, never say what they were talking about. And so this was a way to kind of delve into that that concept, I guess, a little bit. And so I think it's just sort of a labor of love, which frankly is what drives most of our work.
And you've been producing, directing, editing documentaries for more than 25 years. You've lived in L.A., and now you're back. You're in Illinois. Why would you move back to Illinois? Is that a place where you feel like you can do the kind of work you want to do?
Well, that was it, yeah. It was great to live in Los Angeles, and we certainly enjoyed that experience and loved the city. It's a great place for somebody who loves the movies to live. But our intent was to keep making documentaries about Midwestern subjects. There are a lot of people making documentaries about East Coast subjects and West Coast subjects, and some of those are just the same subjects over and over again. And there are a lot of great stories in the Midwest that just go untold. So we moved back here to expand that work, and it certainly has had that effect. We're just really glad to be back here.
What's your next project?
Well, we're finishing up our Country School film was just recently nominated for an Emmy. We're finishing the sequels to Lost Nation, The Iowa 2 and 3, and they're going to premiere in Iowa City at the Museum of Natural History on December 8th. And then we're turning to finishing Movie Star, The Secret Lives of Gene Seberg, by the middle of next year. And in the fall, River to River, Iowa's Forgotten Highway 6 will be coming out with that.
Well, terrific, and I'm sure we'll probably be talking with you more as these other projects come to the public.
Well, that sounds great.
All right, Kelly, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Kelly Rundle is the producer, writer, and director of the short documentary Axeman, which will be part of the Landlocked Film Festival in Iowa City this weekend. And Paul Benedict and Scott Sipker, the Iowa filmmakers, have been getting a whole lot of attention lately for their Iowa Nice videos, but they will be at the festival to showcase another project they've been working on, the pilot of their sitcom Marooned. And before I introduce Paul and Scott, let's hear just a little bit from the beginning of the pilot episode of Marooned.
Guess you're not in New York anymore, huh, Toto?
The Toto?
You're drunk.
Yep.
Taxi!
Thanks for picking us up, Dad.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Weeks.
If you wanted to thank me, you could have brought some tail for yourself and some eye candy for me.
You know, I don't think they'd fit in here, Dad.
It's just right up here on the right.
What do you stay at this place for?
Couchsurfer.com.
It's a website where people let you borrow your couch for a while.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's not what they called it when I was your age.
Dr. Weeks, do you ever sleep?
With your mom.
Okay. Dad, that's enough.
I do it with your mom, too. In fact, I couchsurfer.com'd your last night.
All right, that's not from the beginning of the pilot episode. That's from the middle of the pilot episode of Marooned, although it gives you a little bit of a flavor for the show. Paul and Scott, hello.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Hello, Charity.
Well, thank you both for being here today. And since we started in the middle, let's go back to the beginning. And Paul, why don't I know that Scott wrote this, but he gets to talk a lot, so I'll let you talk first, Paul.
That's true.
Give us the setup for what this sitcom is about.
All right. The premise for Marooned is it takes place in present day, and it's about two actors who come from the coast of Iowa during. It closely follows Iowa history, although we're not exactly keeping it strictly along the same timeline. But basically, they come to Iowa during the film tax credit program and then find themselves stuck here without any film work and having to readjust to a Midwestern lifestyle without the reason that they came here.
All right. And the clip that we played is these two actors have some drinks together. They find that they can't drive home. They walk out onto Court Avenue in Des Moines and try to hail a taxi, which, of course, is pretty much impossible, and then end up getting picked up by your character's dad, Scott.
Yes.
So what inspired you to write this?
Well, we throw around a lot of ideas all the time, and some of them stick. Some of them get scripts written about them. And this one, I think it was, I don't even remember exactly when it was, but I remember getting the idea for this idea of two actors getting stuck in Iowa and calling Paul and telling him the idea. And instantly we knew that this was a good story because it's universal, got the universal themes, but it also touches on what we want to do, which is promoting Iowa. And it's really, really funny to be able to point out the really great parts about this state and also the comical parts of it as well.
And so you said it takes place in present day, Paul. It takes place really, what, 3 or 4 years ago when at least that's what lures these actors back to the state of Iowa, the idea that all of these tax credits will be bringing all of these film projects to the state of Iowa. And, of course, that ends in scandal. Is it your plan to go through that whole process, Scott?
Yeah, so it'll be set in modern day, or it is set in modern day. We manipulate the timeline to make it work, but the story arc is through the first three episodes of the show, you'll see the tax credits coming up into that burning scandal, and then the actors having to deal with that going on. Of course, we fictionalize it and dramatize it in a sense that makes it even more comedic, and we tighten that timeline. But yeah, the whole idea of people coming here and then all of a sudden not having any work, that's what we're tapping into that timeline.
Well, and here are the two of you, and clearly you're committed to Iowa. You care a lot about Iowa. You're making film in Iowa along with a number of other people who are involved in your projects and, of course, I'm sure many other projects as well. But the idea of piloting a sitcom, that seems like a bit of a long shot from Des Moines. What are your hopes for this?
Well, we always try to bite off just a little bit more than we can chew, and then hopefully we can chew a little bit more each time. We really feel like it's a new, like the rules of the game have changed. Nobody exactly knows what those rules are yet, but that's part of what we're hoping to define with this project. There's a lot of outlets like Netflix and Hulu, Amazon.com, Yahoo Screens that are all looking to have scripted original content that's comparable in quality and in format to television, but doesn't come from one of the traditional networks. And so we're really hoping that no matter where you are, you can, as long as it's good and as long as it's produced well, you can get your work shown. And it's actually, we feel like it's a benefit to be coming out of Iowa because it's something that people haven't seen. You know, you couldn't even count the number of cop shows that come out of New York, but people really haven't seen Des Moines.
Right. And what the great part is that we're already showing that this can be done. With the Iowa Nice videos, and now with ESPN noticing us from Bristol, Connecticut, they're noticing us in Des Moines, Iowa.
Right, and you're actually on ESPN now.
That's correct. Yeah. So after the Hawkeye and Cyclone Nice came online, ESPN saw them, took note, and called us up and said, "Hey, do you think you could do this twice a week for us on College Football Daily?" And so each week now from Des Moines, we write, film, and produce two segments for ESPN. One of them is going to air here in about an hour, and then every Wednesday and Friday. And so we're already proving that this can be done. And with the original Iowa Nice, we proved that by releasing something here in Des Moines or in Iowa here, you can get noticed nationally almost instantaneously. And there's no need for this old model to still exist.
Mm-hmm. So when you're talking to people about the pilot of Marooned, you're not trying to take the traditional route.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we wouldn't say no to talking to someone from a traditional network. It's still the way a lot of people watch their material, but it seems like where things are headed is people watching longer format content on their computers, and so that's really what we're focusing on.
Have you gone past the first episode?
We have four episodes written. We after Iowa Nights, we were able to raise a small amount of funds to film this entire pilot episode. Of course, just we had to cut a lot and ask for a lot of volunteer help, which of course Iowans offer by bending over backwards to do. So we haven't been able to film more, but we're hoping with our showing at Landlock, and we're also, of course, pursuing behind the scenes, going after people at Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, whatever it may be, to try and get them to notice this. We really think that once they see it, they'll probably agree with us that this is a great story that can be told, and we can film it right here in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Will this be the first time that a large audience has seen this?
We did show Marooned here in Des Moines at the Des Moines Arts Festival, but I'm guessing this is going to be a slightly larger venue, and we haven't released it online because we're hoping to still sell it, and we don't necessarily want it to be available to the wider public yet.
What were reactions like when you showed it in Des Moines?
It was really fun hearing people's reactions live. I mean, it as cool as it was to see the Iowa Nice, original Iowa Nice, take over to 1 million views, you really can't replicate that experience of actually seeing people watch your film live. And so even though it was only 40 or 50 people, hearing all that laughter and shaking hands afterwards and getting to talk about the film was really a great experience.
Well, we had our clips mixed up here, but let's hear a little bit from the beginning of Marooned. So, again, people can get a little more of a flavor. These two actors coming back to Iowa, one from the East Coast, one from the West Coast.
My name is Liam Weeks, like the collection of days, not the strength level. It's a joke. And I'm an actor from Iowa. I've been living in New York for the past 4 years, and I'm moving back now to pursue acting in Iowa, which isn't as crazy as it sounds, because the state government just passed a great tax incentive program to draw films into the state. And it's working.
Flynn Fitzpatrick, actor, ready to work. Been in L.A. for 6 years, working steady, mostly on soaps. I never thought I'd take my next big step in Iowa. Nobody does. Coincidentally, Des Moines is also the home to Kelly, my soon-to-be baby mama girlfriend. My girlfriend, I mean, not my baby's girlfriend. My girlfriend.
Just a moment from the sitcom Marooned. The pilot of the sitcom will be shown at the Landlocked Film Festival in Iowa City coming up, starting tomorrow, running through the weekend. And this is not the only project you're working on. We've talked about the Iowa Nice videos. We've talked about how you might want to go a non-traditional route with this sitcom. You're also working on a web serial as well.
Yeah, it's called Animal Justice League, and it's a campy comedy about two sort of heroes who go around saving cute animals all the time.
It's a total crowd pleaser.
It is.
We wanted to do something that was fun and easy and would have, people could instantly just enjoy it, and so that's what that was.
And it'll be a shorter format. You know, that we have the Iowa Nice videos, which are about 2 minutes. Marooned, which is about 20-minute episodes like your normal sitcom, and then our web series Animal Justice League will be about 10 minutes long. So we're experimenting with all these different formats. We're going to perfect it, get it all figured out, hopefully have a variety of shows to show people.
All right. So even though we don't have an awesome tax credit system, it seems like both of you feel that Iowa is a place where you can make film and get it seen.
Absolutely. We're the phoenix rising from the ashes of that that experience. And much like the mammals coming after the dinosaurs, we're the new mammals.
All right. Scott Sipker and Paul Benedict, the Iowa filmmakers, the pilot episode of their sitcom Marooned will be shown at the Landlocked Film Festival in Iowa City starting tomorrow and running through the weekend. You can find more about the festival at landlockedfilmfestival.org. Talk of Iowa was produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan, with technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.